Hi, my name is Charlotte Armitage and this is Objects. Objects is a podcast that takes you on a journey through before, during and after care using the objects that mean the most to care experienced people. Who Cares Scotland is inviting you to come on this journey with us by listening to our podcast. Hello, I'm Charlotte Armitage. On this episode of Objects, I'm speaking to David Anderson. David is a care experienced father and partner to Anne-Sophie, whom he works alongside running their 7-hectare therapeutic farm in France. David is a former social worker and is a current co-chair of the Promise Scotland Oversight Board. He does his bit to see a positive changes come to the so-called care system. Please tell me a little bit about you, David.
Yeah, so I was in care. I was in everything but adoption, I think. From being looked after at home right through to secure units. I left care and lost my way a little and then decided that I wanted to be a social worker. So I'd done that for a little while. Gave that up, moved to Spain to change my life, met a wonderful woman, and together we decided that we'd like to do something together involving animals and nature and helping people, supporting people. So we moved to, it was either Brittany or Dundee, and I'd kind of done Dundee to death, so I thought I would give France a go. So we moved into a 7-hectare farm, and for the last 5 years, we've been building that project up and welcoming people from right across society, just exploring the kind of therapeutic nature of the relationship between animals, humans, and the stuff that grow around us.
Amazing. I'm sure we'll come back to that at some point in the discussion. But before we go on to discussing the objects, I would like you to tell me about the process of finding them. What was your process and how did you decide what you wanted to bring with you?
Well, initially I made a mistake because I forgot that it was a before, during and after care object thing. So the objects I chose first, I had to discard and go through the process again. But it was really interesting, actually, because it's not something that you think about. So to have that question posed to me was one that I turned over in my head on for quite a while. And the objects came quite naturally, I think. Yeah, I'm quite pleased with the choices.
That's good. And did you find it quite a positive experience then, going through the actual process of figuring out your objects?
Yeah, positive, but also tainted with memories of times that haven't always been, looking back, that great memories for me. But the process itself was positive, and the things that I've chosen, because they're really important to me, I think that they're positive choices. So I've kind of, that was the overriding feeling.
Brilliant, absolutely. So I think this is probably a good time to get started on talking about your objects. So the first object, as you said, represents before care. Could you tell us a little bit about your object? And if you have it, I would love to see it.
I didn't bring it because it's too big. And well, then the first one doesn't exist anymore. So the first object is a greenhouse. So here is a picture of my current greenhouse.
Fantastic.
But yeah, the reason that I chose this, I mean, when I was growing up in a housing scheme in Dundee, I mean, at the time it was all quite normal, but you were surrounded by lots of kind of violence and drinking and misogyny and racism and all these things that were going on, as well as the kind of stuff that was going on in my own house, which wasn't always that great. And the greenhouse for me was a place that I escaped to. I remember when we moved house when I was around 6, and we had a garden, because before we lived in a tenement, and this little garden, my mother put a greenhouse in, and it was like a wee bit tropical, you know, like because of the heat, and obviously Scotland's a cold place, but sometimes there was heat, and you were in this kind of humid kind of atmosphere, and I was able to just kind of like dig away and make little. I used to take water and make little rivers and little lands, and it was just a place I went and escaped in my mind. And I loved it. And my mum would sometimes be looking for me. I'd hear her shouting, you know, come in for your dinner or your tea. And I would wake up in the greenhouse, or she would come and find me there just like faffing around, growing things, you know, planting weeds and stuff. It was great. And it's been something that, I mean, I think this is really important. Some of these things that are important to you, they stick with you your whole life. When I was in a children's home in Dundee, around 13, 14, and I was probably at my most kind of, I was rejecting everything, you know, like I'd kind of been rejected. So I think naturally I was rejecting everything around me and I was getting into lots of trouble. But even at that point, which was probably when I feel I was at my most troubled, I went up to the local allotments in this area and I just kind of like hung about and waited until I seen somebody. And then I asked them if I could come and help at the greenhouse, at the allotments. And there was an old couple like Jack and Victor. And they were like, just looking at me, what's this guy, this young boy coming up? So they say, okay then, we'll give you a try. You could come in. And I used to go in their greenhouses and I would help them out, potting up stuff and all that. And then now, as I've shown you with my photo, I've got like a big greenhouse. So greenhouse is a really good memory from before my care experience. I still get that feeling. And funnily enough, Anne Sophie's grandfather loved his greenhouse. So it brings her something nice as well. To see me in there and being happy reminds her of her grandfather sitting in his greenhouse being happy. So
absolutely.
It's a really positive.
It's a consistent safe place by the sounds of it. Every step of the way, a greenhouse is representing a place to escape, as you said, and be safe in an activity that you enjoy that's consistent throughout your life.
Yeah, really, really a safe space, I think. So when I get that feeling, it was like, I thought about that and it was like an escape from everything that was going on. And unfortunately, at the moment, we've got some peacocks on the farm and they've decided that my tomatoes, et cetera, are really tasty. So I've got to find a way to stop them getting in.
I'm not sure I can help you on that one, I'm afraid. So coming back to before care, you said that you were brought up in Dundee. What was that like at the time that you were in Dundee?
Yeah, as you say, it was all really normal. But I mean, when I look back, you learn about everything that was kind of like wrong about what you were seeing what you were seeing. There was lots of violence, lots of drinking, lots of racism, misogyny, all that stuff was going on. And you were kind of like absorbing that as a kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just, I mean, it was a great time as well. I mean, I don't look back and think what a horrible childhood, you know. We had a lot of liberty.
Yeah.
You kind of left in the morning to go out, like at the weekend, and you didn't see your parents, and you were away getting up to all sorts of stuff. Maybe not quite as positive as they should have been experiences for children, but yeah, it was good and like wrong a lot of the time.
Yeah, for sure. And then, so you said that you were brought into care and you stayed in children's home. I think that's probably a good way to sort of move into your second job, Jack. Before you go on to your second job, Jack, could you tell us around about what age you were taken into care and then tell us what your object is?
Yeah, it was around 11. Things are just like, I always describe it as like the family was just like an exploded landmine, you know. There was just bits everywhere after my dad had left. My mum was in hospital. I'd kind of like stayed with my aunt for a wee while. And then there was like, I'd been getting in trouble at school and whatnot. So they'd sent a policeman round to tell me that what I was doing was wrong. But that was never going to work. The social worker was like kind of coming round. My mum and dad weren't really engaging with the social worker. My mum was quite, she just didn't want to say things were wrong, and my dad was very resistant to kind of any kind of authority involvement. So then they just took me to this panel, and like this group of people behind a big desk decided that I was to go in for a period of assessment in a place called Burnside in Dundee, which was basically a lock-up place. You all wore the same clothes, everything was locked, the windows opened only a few inches. So it was just like a preparation for prison, basically. And then I was there for 6 months and then moved to a place far away up in Pitlochry. I was kind of like, didn't work either. Felt really like alone because I was the only one that spoke Dundonian.
Yeah, for sure.
And it just didn't work. And then I was punted around children's homes in Dundee. A couple of foster placements, didn't work. And then And then they didn't know what to do with me really, because I was starting to come to 16, and I was just like really resistant to everything that they were saying. So they got a flat for me, which they put me in when I was 16. I was really ill prepared. And then that went. I was going to say tits. Sorry, that went west, and that the social work just closed the kind of case because I'd disappeared for a while. So
sounds like in quite a short period of time, really, you experienced quite a lot of change in your life. You know, 5 years is not really a huge amount of time when you think about it, and all those different things happened to you in that time frame. It must be really hard for a child to go through that.
I mean, I think you're just surviving through all that. You don't understand everything, and I think if I, on reflection, I always look at it and think like, well, I've kind of lost my mum and dad, so I'm not going to trust anybody else.
Yeah.
And then a lot at that time, there was just a lot of kind of reaction to your behaviour. The understanding about what happened was kind of lost in the kind of reactions to how you were, your behaviour was. So that, and then you meet other kind of kids that have been through stuff, and you kind of bond with them. Like, so eventually I rejected every adult, every authority figure, and the only people that were important to me was a peer group that, you know, wasn't really the best kind of peer group to have, considering what they were going through. So it was no wonder that it ended where it did.
We actually managed to miss over your object when we were speaking there, but it would be good to know what your object is for representing during care.
Right, well, like a lot of people that go through care, they don't have any, like I've got nothing, you know, like that 5 years, I've got no mementos, no objects, nothing, zada, just nilch. So I just said zada and nilch when I should have said nilch and, no, I should have said zilch and nada. But I do have a photo, because, and the second object is my care records. So I chose them because they're really important to me, and it's the only photo I've got from that time. So that is the photo there. I don't know if, do I show that to the camera?
You can show it to the camera, yeah.
So that was me with a Dundee flick back in back in the early 80s. So the reason I chose my care records was because they kind of set something off in me. I remember, like a lot of people, you kind of leave that stuff behind, what happened to you, and you become this kind of like functional adult with a kind of lot of dysfunction going on in the way you are. And I was never able to have any like kind of relationships that were kind of normal, because I kind of rejected love, you know, I just did. And eventually that's why I went to Spain as well, just to get away. And just I'd kind of like say to myself, I'm never going to meet anybody else. I'm just going to be on my chuff, you know, and do stuff like that. And then I met Anne Sophie, and it just changed my world, you know. And I remember saying to myself, like, I've got to kind of accept to be loved, which means in some way I've got to kind of begin to love myself, because I just didn't like myself. And that opened a wee chink for me. And then we had kids, and like my wee boy just loves me to death, and like I always tell him I love him, and just really, you know, like, but I always want, like, if you tell me you'd love me, and I would find that really weird, you know what I mean? Like, and then I thought, no, you're just, that's really weird that you find that weird, because that's just the most normal thing in the world, you know? So that kind of like started me thinking. And then around that time, I got access to my care records, and that process, well, reading them, like, just sent me in a kind of tailspin. I never expected it. I thought I'd be able to deal with it. I thought it was like really at a point where that wouldn't have that, and it didn't, you know. And I think, and it was this photo, I think, that kind of set me off, because I realized I was just a wee laddie and I needed like love back then, and I never got it, and I just had to deal with the shit, you know, like the adults had kind of thrown at me, and then I hadn't liked myself. And reading those care records, I could see why, because all the kind of terminology they used was about problems and about behavior and about it, just really negative, you know. And I'm thinking, well, if that was kind of the message I was getting, there was no wonder, like, for the majority of my adult life, I've just like thought I was a bit of a prick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like nobody could convince me otherwise, you know what I mean? Even though like everything that was going on was really positive in my life, that so I had to go through that, and I kind of went down, but the care record's important because I've come back up again. And like, I can say, like, and I can even say it publicly, can like, I've now found that I love myself and I'm not that person that was written in those records.
Yeah.
And that was wrong to write about me like that. And there's something that I do now that's like, I'm doing a recruitment process for something. And there's a list of kind of like attributes that they're looking for. And I've been involved with this thing. So those attributes were what they were looking for in me. So I now look at that and think, well, actually, if that's who I am, you know, I'm that list of attributes. I'm not that list of negative words that were written about me. So I think I chose the care records, not because it's like they're positive, but because of the impact it's had on me, even though it was really difficult. Maybe I had to go there to like know myself better and to accept certain things and to come out of it a better version of myself.
To look back empathetically as well, that what you just said about looking at that photo and realizing that you were just a little boy, like kind of giving yourself like the permission to feel that way, because that in itself is quite a challenging like feeling to sit with, to accept that everything that happened to you was happening to you whilst you were a child, not as you are now. And I can imagine that's probably been quite an emotional and powerful journey to go on.
Yeah, I've done it. And not only just for yourself, but for the people around you. You know, they've got, because they know you and they see you and they know what you're doing and what you're going through. And like outwardly, like for other people, they're seeing like, oh, because everything was going really well in my life. You know what I mean? That was everything was going really well. And then, but internally, you've got this kind of like turmoil going on about how you're feeling about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think like that was over a year and a half ago now. And I went through the worst of it, and then things have just been getting better in terms of that aspect. And I think I knew I had to go through it, but just had been pushing it to one side. So that's what that represents. That
I think it's also really like testament to kind of what we speak about loads at Who Care Scotland, is that, you know, we're here talking specifically about the during care, but care never leaves us. It doesn't just park at the point when we leave the actual formal institution or we've left like through care, after care. It continues right on to where we are in our adult lives. And some people might not be able to grasp that reality until you hear from people like you and I talking about the lifelong impact that it's had on us as individuals and every single aspect of our life. So I think that's a really important conversation to have in our discussion just now, is that making sure that people realise that just as this represents the during care, this is actually as much as the next objects might be, it's about for the rest of your life. Like the care record symbolise something that you'll carry
completely
forever.
Yeah, I had that conversation quite recently with a group of people who were speaking about, oh, we need to be talking to people with lived experience. And I'm saying, well, but like, and they were meaning young people. And I'm saying, well, of course you should be speaking to people, to young people, but you can't discount people because they live that experience all their life. It doesn't stop, you know, it keeps going. And the other point I'd like to make is just about support to go through that. You know, like I remember having tentative discussions with some people about setting up a kind of support line for people who were going to be accessing the records, but not through social work or through like people that had done it themselves. Because yeah, I think speaking about that with somebody might help other people. So
I hope that
is available to everybody.
Absolutely. So the third and final object represents where you are now and your aftercare process. So tell us a little bit about your aftercare object.
Okay, I think it's all mixed up, but I have brought one, and it's just something that's really important to me. It's been it's a flower. It's the poppy. It's my favourite flower, and it has been for a lot of years. But it's also one that I share as a favourite with Aunt Sophie. And my children now love poppies. And like, you know, so for example, every Mother's Day, we go out in the morning, and because it's the right time, we'll go and search the local area for poppies. And I go with my boy. So it's something that's growing in my family, you know. So I brought a picture of a poppy that Aunt Sophie took in Spain, where we met. I shall show it to the camera. And there's a few words on it. Can you read that for me? Because I'd like to hear it read by someone else.
The poppy is a flower that ranks amongst the best, yet never tries to state the claim that it is better than the rest. The poppy is a flower, a favourite for us to choose, a symbol of this love we have and are destined never to lose.
Yeah, so like when I first met Anne Sophie, it was like a real kind of, as I say, I had to accept to be loved. You know, when I met her, I knew something had changed. I'm thinking, right, Anderson, this is it. You know, you either just like knock it on the head or you're going to have to go for it, you know. And I decided to go for it. And we spent a really beautiful week together when she came across to Spain. And we took a picture amongst the poppies. And then she went back to France and I stayed in Spain. And we continued to speak for about 6 months, just online and on the telephone and whatnot. And then she decided just to come over and live with me. I mean, I've got so much respect for that. She left her life in France. You know, she just left everything and she came to try to live with me, you know, and like explore that love that we shared. And it was like when she was coming, I'm like, oh, it's just gonna work, you know. And it was like, and there was this one poppy, and the week before she came, this one poppy was there on the road. And I'm like making this deal with myself, saying, if that poppy lasts until she gets here, then it's going to be all right, you know, like that silly thing you do. and it was still there when I went to pick her up at the airport, and it was still there when we come back, and I was able to point it out to her. And it's just like, the poppy is really fragile, but it exists in places that you just wouldn't expect, and really tough conditions. And I just love it, and I love what it represents for me and my family. And so I think everybody should love poppies.
And so you and Anne Sophie, you said earlier at the start of the episode that you've run a therapeutic farm together. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that life is like now that you've obviously got children together and you're doing this as a joint venture?
Yeah, it's like, because obviously you have ideas, and when we met and we were speaking and having all these ideas of what we'd like to do. Anne Sophie's a teacher, or was a teacher, a specialist teacher. So she had a class with kids who had neuro problems. And then we said, we want to do something else. We want to do this together. So we were looking around for a farm, and then there's a 7-hectare farm and her family, and her dad said, look, if you're going to do it anywhere, do it here. And initially she was really resistant to that because it was a family home, and she just didn't, she wanted away from that, you know. And then we were looking at other places, and then we realized that we needed the support network around us if we wanted to do anything, you know.
For sure.
Even just getting your children kept from your, you know, from their grandmother or that, you know, we would have lost all that support network. So we thought we would try it. So for the last 5 years we've just been building it up, and we work with everybody. I remember working for an organization in Scotland, and they had a no rejection policy, and that was really important to me because, like, I thought that's what I needed when I was young, so I kind of kept that. And so we work with everybody from, I think the youngest kid that comes is like 3, and the oldest person is in their 70s. So, and we'd, Anne Sophie does animal mediation. I kind of do like what they call a suivi educatif, which is basically just, you know, like kids that are maybe not going to school, so like they'll come with me. So if you're doing, want to do maths, well, you go and measure some wood and make a wee project, or just like do stuff with the animals. Lots of stuff we do, so it's great. It's a beautiful place. It's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of shit to shovel, but we're our own bosses, you know. And
yeah,
and Anne Sophie's like the best person ever to do that with. So like we're just really happy, you know. Sometimes we get tired, but we're really pleased. And it's like sometimes it takes other people to come and you see it through their eyes, because somebody will come and they'll go, wow, you know. And then they you have to lift your head up and go, oh yeah, it is wow, you know, because you're kind of in all the things you've got to do. But everybody seems to enjoy it. They all want to come back, and it's been really successful so far. So I cordially invite you to visit, Charlotte.
I'll take that invite.
You bring your partner out, and you can come and experience it yourself.
Absolutely. And before you were doing the farm, we said in the little intro bit that you used to be a social worker. It's quite a big change to go from a social worker to working in a therapeutic farm. How have you found that change?
Like, Yeah, but I'd went to uni. I'd like after like loads of shit happened, and then I was 21. I always was interested in learning, so I went back and done an access course to uni, which was a really good course. I hope they still do them, because you didn't have to do exams. You just passed modules, and then it gave you an entry to uni. So I'd done a European studies course, and I never wanted ever to go near anything near care. But then I started working in a homeless unit.
Mm.
And really kind of connected with the young people in there, that, you know, like, and I'm saying to them, look, you know, there's still opportunities out there, and education's a great way to kind of like explore that. And then an organisation, I think you probably know them, Include Them, had just started back then, and they were really innovative at the time. And like somebody said to me, you should go and work for them, and they gave my number to somebody who phoned me, and I went and met with Sandy, who started Who Cares, and the board of directors there, and they had to take a chance on me, because I had some history with the police and whatnot, so they had to really kind of like see through that and take a chance on me. So, and they did, but I realised that social workers had a lot of clout. So even though I was spending time trying to represent young people, when you went to the children's panel, you kind of got ignored. So I'm like, yeah, right, I better get that qualification, and then maybe they'll listen. And then Include Them changed a bit. So I thought, I'm going to get a real social work job. And I went to a children's family team, but then the Conservatives got in. So I knew what was going to happen to funding. So I left, and that's when I went to Spain. Plus, like, I needed that change.
For sure.
But yeah, I didn't really enjoy the social work, the real social work job. It wasn't me.
So what's it like being back in that kind of care sector space then, being on the oversight board for The Promise? And you've obviously been involved, I've known you now for about 5 years through Who Cares Scotland.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, before I met you lot, I'd just been sitting in my jammies like in the morning before everybody got up, contributing to stuff. And then that happened. And I remember meeting you and Kenny and some others on the first stage, like, who's this guy? Let's go and check him out. He all came up and spoke to me. And that actually set me on a journey in terms of the whole love thing, actually, because I'd never heard that spoken about, really. And it was something that I found really interesting that you were pushing that, and just about changing the narrative. And, mm-hmm. and so I've just kept going, you know, and like, if there's a space that I can try and influence things, and I'll get in there and try and do it, because I think it's really important. And
absolutely.
I think that the work that we've done, and people before us have done, and people continue to do, is so important, and it's worked. I've watched change happen, you mm-hmm. know, and that to me means that the effort works. So I'm going to keep trying.
Absolutely, and it's just exciting to be around when you can see the change that you're trying to see impacting other people in front of you. But you must get a lot of reward and like and joy out of that.
Yeah, yeah, completely. And as I say, like the change in me, that process of being where I was to where I am now is, I mean, as I say, at times it's been really, really difficult, but it's not one that I wouldn't have wanted to go on, you know. It's been
absolutely
a great learning process for me, and I continue to be happy to do that.
For sure. Well, I think that's us gone through the process of your objects. I want to say thank you for joining me. And I want to finish on a final question, and this would be for you, to anyone else that's considering going on objects, and that would be, what would your advice be for anyone who would like to go through this process themselves?
I would probably say listen to the podcast, the previous ones, to get a flavour of what it's all about, you know, to see what other people have spoken about, and to know that you know, it's quite a personal experience, you know, so to be prepared for that, to chat with you like you done with me, because that's a good preparation, you know. I think you have to really know that, yeah, the stuff that you're talking about might kind of bring stuff up for you, as it has done for me during my podcast. But yeah, to really just to try and enjoy it, and if you're given the opportunity, then I would encourage you to go for it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me again, David, and I look forward to taking that trip in Brittany.
Pleasure. Thanks.